Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
In January, the Straits Times reported that more people who used their CPF to pay for their housing loans were unable to fully refund that amount after they sold their properties in 2020 compared with the previous 2 years. No one from this group was required to top up the deficit in their CPF in cash that year. The vast majority of the cases sold their property at market value. But this means that for some, the selling price of their flats was not enough to fully refund the CPF monies used plus accrued interest. And this means going forward, this group of people would have less CPF to tap on for their next property or for their retirement. I wanted to do the show because I was talking to someone about this when I read the story, and they said, hey, do you remember there was a time where, you know, it seemed as if, in her opinion, her property agent was helping her do the calculations for the show, and it seemed as if, you know, they were sort of leaning towards using as much of your CPF as you can, as opposed to maybe being a little bit more conservative with how much you left in your CPF. And this, she mentioned, was her experience at least 10 years ago and how she thought things were changing. So I wanted to do a show where we would do the maths behind what you need to factor into your CPF use for your property. How much you should use for it? What's a, you know, some good considerations to keep in mind? Elijah Lee is Associate Financial Services Manager from Phillips Securities. Good morning, Elijah.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us, talking about something a lot of people are really, you know, they dream about their dream home, but they very often don't think about the maths involved. So actually, it's quite simple maths. But there are many different dimensions and factors to keep in mind when it comes to using your CPF. Are you going to take a bank loan, a HDB loan? How much of your CPF do you plan to save for your retirement? Lots of questions. So let's start with the basic, okay, the overview. What should go into a decision of how much one should use in terms of your ordinary account from your CPF for housing?
Okay, I think that's actually a very good question, and there are a number of factors that would apply. So let's talk about first-time homeowners. Actually, like myself, I'm also a first-time homeowner. I just moved into my resale flat just not more than 3 months ago.
Congratulations!
Yeah, thank you. So actually, one of the considerations back then was actually, the fact is, it is going to be a little bit hard to avoid using your OA for your down payment unless you have some kind of financial support from, say, your parents.
Yeah.
Right. So definitely, let's say you take a HDB loan, that's going to be 15% cash or CPF. You take a bank loan, you got to put down 5% cash, 20% CPF. So if you think about the figures involved, and if I may share my personal experience, I actually took a bank loan, and I put down actually more than 25% of the down payment in cash and CPF, but I kept the cash component at 5%.
Okay.
So the rest, I actually took it from my CPF. And of course, I'm already in my late 30s. So my CPF had quite a chunk of money. So the intent was actually to just take care of the down payment cost with CPF because, and for reasons you will hear about later, I wanted to conserve cash.
Wow.
So, yeah. So, but we must remember that this is definitely a very big five-figure amount. For some people, it may even be a six-figure amount, right? So, short of actively planning and saving for it, which I don't think a lot of people would think about that, CPF, I think, is good because you are forced to set aside this money in your OA when you work, you know. So, your OA has been building out these years. Just use it first, okay? But there are always ways to put it back later.
Okay, so give us a breakdown again. How much OA and how much cash were you trying to put aside?
Okay, so I actually paid the bare minimum in cash, 5%, and then I put up about another 25% in OA. So actually, my down payment was in the region of about 30%+.
Okay, how much of your OA was left?
I had about, it's CPF money, so no one can steal it. I had about 50,000 left in the OA.
Okay.
After that, yeah. Okay. So part of that was also to consider that, you know, because I'm self-employed, so if there is any cash flow issues, I can actually tap on my OA to service the mortgage payments for a while.
Yeah, people often think of that, right? Some savings put aside there, which they can then use. But, you know, were you thinking at the time when you use your OA money, I'm going to have to pay this back with the interest rate?
I did.
That I would have to pay myself.
Correct. I did. It was actually something that I had thought about. But, of course, I had plans to pay back because, as you are aware, you are actually allowed to make voluntary housing refunds to your CPF.
Oh.
And it's actually something I'm doing.
Oh, it is? Actively? From the third month, you're moved in and you're already thinking of repaying yourself.
I started repaying already.
We wouldn't expect any less from an associate financial services manager, I think. All right, so is it a smart decision to repay your OA versus your bank loan as soon as you can, Elijah?
I personally feel that, there are good loans like mortgage and then bad loans like credit card balances, right? But in the current low interest rate environment, I will actually want to take advantage of having a bank loan. And then I'll take a bank loan versus a HDB loan. But of course, I'm just going to make my mortgage repayment duration quite comfortable so that the monthly mortgage itself is comfortable. But, you know, if you have too short a loan and then you run into cash flow issues, as I mentioned, then you may be cash strapped. So that's one consideration I had when I took my bank loan. Now, as we know that you have to repay the principal and accrue interest to CPF when you sell a house. So it will probably make sense, if it's possible, to repay your OA along with servicing your mortgage. That's what I'm doing, actually. I am actually servicing my mortgage and I'm also making periodic repayments via the housing refund to my OA.
So I don't understand, why not just pay more in cash in the first place rather than have the accrued interest build up and have to pay that off?
Okay, part of my reasoning was actually I wanted to conserve cash first when I was doing my down payment, because you would have to reserve cash for things like your renovation, your appliances, all that. So, you know, there's not a lot of visibility on how much you might really be spending on your renovation. And I can tell you that definitely I went past budget. So it was a good thing that I kept cash on the side for things like this.
When
the dust settles, you have a clear idea of your finances, then you start to repay. You know, so I did some accrued interest because actually my renovation took quite some time. In fact, if you have read about those renovation nightmare stories, I think mine would qualify.
Really? Should do a whole show on it. How long did it stretch out for?
I took 11 months for my 5-room flat.
How long were you planning to spend on renovations?
Probably 5 to 6 months.
Whoa, that's double the time.
And it's almost double the time, right? And the sad thing is, actually, it was quite a reputable firm, supposedly, but I ended up taking quite long. So imagine, for example, if, let's say, I wasn't staying with my parents and I was renting. Now I have to extend my rent by 6 months. Things like that. That all takes cash.
That's why you went with cash. Okay, since you're a new homeowner in this space and we're talking about loans and you're in the financial sector, I want to ask you, are you worried at all about these interest rate hikes? I just this morning heard JP Morgan expecting, and this is not definite, but they are expecting some 25 basis points at each of the 9 meetings of the Fed, which translates to about 2.25% rate hike. Are you at all thinking, how is this going to translate to my mortgage?
Well, I would say when you first get the loan, of course, the banks will stress test your ability to repay, right? So definitely they do the stress test, if I recall, because this was quite some time back. They use a 3.5% interest rate to actually stress test your finances before they compute how much you're eligible for. So I'm actually not too worried. And as I mentioned just now, I actually get the loan payment very comfortable. I could take a bigger loan, but of course I didn't. I could shorten the loan duration to like 10 years, but again, I didn't.
Fixed or floating rates?
It was a floating.
Floating. So my question is, are you worried that rising rates in the US are going to impact your bank rates here?
It will impact, but I'm not too worried because based on the stress test, I know I can handle it.
I see. Okay,
To do your numbers, right? Yeah, it's part of being a responsible house owner.
Well, nicely said. Okay, so Elijah, how can one think through the need to balance how much money we use for housing from our CPF versus how much money we want to put aside for retirement or how much money we want to put aside to invest?
That's a good question. That's actually something I also considered, which is partly why I wanted to ensure that I would be able to continue my investments even while paying the housing loan. As for context, I'm paying my housing loan via cash. I decided to use cash so that my CPF can continue to
build.
Compound. Yes, and I didn't want the accrued interest to spiral out of hand, right? So actually, one of the things I did after I moved in was to check the accrued interest, because I know it had been a year since I put the down payment. So I just wanted to see what it ballooned to. And at that point, I immediately made a partial repayment of a few thousand
because
dollars.
It can be frightening, that accrued interest.
Correct. I actually saw, my mom wasn't aware of accrued interest. So she's, of course, paid up her house. But, you know, one day I was explaining RA to her and stuff. And I just explained to her about this accrued interest. And when she saw the figure, she nearly fainted. Yeah. So, yes, it can compound quite frighteningly.
Yeah.
Because my mom, she used her OA for everything.
Ah, okay. But yeah. She's paid off her loan. Yeah.
She's paid off her loan. It was her, the house was bought like about almost 30 years ago. But that just goes to show how the accrued interest can really spiral. So I didn't want that to happen. Naturally, I did the down payment first in OA to conserve cash. But now that renovation's over, appliances are bought and all that, I am now able to have clearer visibility on my cash flow, and that's when I start to make periodic repayments, because I do believe that CPF is actually a very good foundation for retirement.
I think it's a good way to save.
Yeah, I'm just using kind of like a hybrid thing. So when it comes to this, right, about how much you use for housing versus retirement or investing, right? So we must remember that there are certain ratios in place, like the mortgage servicing ratio and the total debt servicing ratio, which MAS has put in place to ensure that people don't over leverage. So I think if you use these guidelines, right, you should be okay. So, for example, the mortgage servicing ratio, it was around 30%+. And if you are not really paying more than 30% on your mortgage, I think you would have 70% to do other things, right? So I did some math. My own mortgage servicing ratio is probably in the region of about 20%+. So it's not really a lot. So I do have like 80% of my money to go and invest and save for retirement and things like that.
And the TDSR, what are the ratios we should keep in mind? Total debt service.
TDSR
ratio
has been adjusted with the recent property cooling measures last year, right? So that is now down to 55%. But honestly, if you are near that 55%, you should actually take a step back and relook, because the TDSR includes things like your car loan, right? That's if you have a car. So personally, I wouldn't want to be spending more than half of my money servicing any debt. The lower, the better.
Yeah. Lower the better, for sure.
Correct.
What about investing? Do you think it's important? I know people who are still just trying to save for their 9 to 12 months emergency savings before they start to invest, which I think is a wise thing to do.
Yes.
What do you think about cash flow and investing?
Personally, I think you've got to try and set aside a minimum amount to invest every month. I suppose you are familiar with regular savings plans, which is whereby you set aside a sum amount every month just to enter the market, regardless of the market condition. So I have that going on for myself. And of course, I also setting aside monies in the war chest, trying to buy any good stocks if there are good price corrections. And I'm also, okay, as a self-employed, of course, I'm also setting aside money in CPF. So I adopt a very multi-asset kind of approach. I make sure I have something in safe assets and something in risky assets. And no matter what, I try and keep up that amount that I'm putting aside every month into my investments.
So you have a private retirement income plan. What is that?
Oh, okay. That is basically a retirement plan. It's basically a form of endowment from an insurer. So whereby you set aside some money, and then at a certain age, the insurer will pay you a stream of income for, say, maybe like 20 years. And that stream of income is guaranteed, and that's the beauty of it, really, because I don't have to worry about things like market conditions or even geopolitical events. Like we know now that Russia and Ukraine are having some tensions, right? So that, of course, could affect markets. It could affect a lot of things. Or even black swan events like COVID. Imagine if COVID hit. So actually, I have some clients, you know, when COVID hit, and they actually had a lot of shares in those tourism-related stocks, like aviation-related stocks.
Oh, dear.
We know that SIA stopped paying dividends, SET stopped paying dividends. So can you imagine if, like, your stock portfolio was heavily skewed towards that? You would be starving, because you would have no payouts. And the stocks will be at a loss. Would you actually dare to sell them just to raise cash for your retirement? So I think it's important to diversify your retirement income streams, which is what I'm doing. Not to say that CPF is bad or anything. I definitely believe in CPF. I will always make sure that every year I max out my CPF contributions. But it just felt that beyond CPF, because CPF is really for you know, I think 1M65, you know, Mr. Lu from 1M65,
oh, yes.
He did
He's
say
been on
before
my shows
that.
Many times.
Yeah, correct. So he did say before that CPF is ready for sustenance. And if you want something beyond that, you got to make plans for that. So, of course, I want just a bit more beyond that. I just make sure that I got a couple of guaranteed streams of income. One is CPF, one is a private retirement income plan. So I think I'm okay on that front, and the rest can be investment income, dividends, coupons, things like that. Things Wait. That are, you know, market.
Before you bought your resale flat, did you think in terms of how much will I be able to save if I live here? Did that factor into your decision on what, you know, how much to spend on your flat?
Well, first thing I did was actually to look at me, myself, and my wife's CPF balances. So we knew, like, what's in theory, if it was really expensive, because we bought our flat after the circuit breaker, if the prices were really high, what was the maximum we could afford? And now that we knocked it down a notch, because we really didn't want to overspend on housing. Yeah, so it's just being prudent. And after that, we did also kind of work out some numbers when we were taking the loan to ensure that after we move, we are servicing a mortgage, we still have spare cash. As I like to tell some of my clients, you know, if you are single, you cannot afford to save 60% of income, you may find it hard to get married. And in my situation, if I'm married, but I cannot afford to save, as I say, about 40% of my income, I cannot think of starting a family. If you are out there, you have kids, you can't save 20% of income, you probably find it hard to retire.
I like that. If you're single, you should be able to save 60%, and then and then you can
then
you
be able to get married.
If you're married, you should be able to save at least 40%.
Correct. Save or invest, lah. Right.
Before and the kids come on, and then you spend all that 40% on them. You probably send 50% on them.
Yeah, that's true. I see a lot of that happening.
And while you have kids, you're still aiming, Elijah, to save 20%.
Yes, I am. In fact, I believe if I could, I'll do more. But of course, I don't have kids. We will find out. But yeah, if I have kids, I definitely want to be able to still save and invest and, of course, do my CPF contributions, all of that.
Okay, what about people who've sold their houses and then realize they don't have enough to even repay their CPF or their housing loan? So they might be in a tenuous situation. Well, what sort of advice do you have for people like that?
Well, okay, I think we just got to be realistic about, first thing, how much you can fetch when you sell your house. If you think you can, if you don't have enough to repay, right, then, okay, if you sold your house at market value, you're not required to make up any shortfall. You can't repay the accrued interest. That was reported in the article.
Yeah,
correct?
So don't worry about that.
So I wouldn't worry about it. So I would say at the very least, make sure you're selling at market value. Mm. But, you know, to even prevent yourself getting from this point to that point, you got to plan ahead to retire. Do your planning properly. There was a survey, I think, sometime last year, where OCBC Bank actually did a survey, and they found that those who actually planned to retire and had more money than those who just, you know, winged it and just take it as it comes. So, you know, if you don't plan for something, how do you track your progress and ensure that you will, you know, have the what you want financially when it's time to, say, retire, sell a house, or so on and so forth?
Thank you for helping us make smarter financial decisions when it comes to buying our first home, Elijah, and enjoy your brand new home.
Yeah, thank you. I will.
Elijah Lee is Associate Financial Services Manager from Phillips Securities. This is Money and Me.
Money and Me is brought to you by Raffles Health Insurance. Speak to our Raffles Health Advisor to learn more about our Raffles Shield A plus Raffles Hospital option. For more information, visit www.raffleshealthinsurance.com.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.